Hello and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Acton, and with me is Leo San. Leo, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, Ryan. Got a little bit of deja vu here. We recorded exactly a week ago, and the Wolves had just lost in overtime to the Pacers. And today, they play a much different-looking Pacers team, and they got the shit kicked out of them. So it's funny, because my first reaction to this loss wasn't like necessarily devastation, because we were thoroughly outplayed. It wasn't a matter of us playing down to the competition or doing things that was just completely like out of the blue, like Ant was clearly hobbled and everything like that. So I'm not as upset coming into that, less bad vibes for me. But I will say, with all this talk about, oh, well, expansions on the horizon from Adam Silver, and you know they want to add two teams to the West potentially, and maybe the Wolves would be the team that moves to the East. Well, I was thinking about that after this loss. I'm like, okay, if we relocated to the East, it's likely in our new division we'd be in the mix with teams like the Indiana Pacers, the Toronto Raptors, Detroit Pistons, Milwaukee Bucks. Those in those four teams alone, we've got 1-6 against them this season. I believe we're 500 against Eastern Conference teams this season. So, and that's just so far. Like, we still have a couple left to go against those teams. So a little, you know, it's interesting to kind of think about that and like, all right, well, where, how good really are the Wolves? And would moving East really be better? But, you know, I was thinking about the bigger picture things because clearly this game was a bit of a freak show in terms of how the Wolves played, what the end result was, what it means for the standings. So we'll have a lot more about that this episode. How about you, Ryan? How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. Certainly last week we were pretty crabby after that brutal Pacers loss. But tonight, obviously on the road, Pacers had all their guys. Game losing at Indiana in and of itself is not something to freak out about, but especially if you look at the shooting numbers of it all. But it's just kind of like, well, that's fine, but then you should have beat them last time, or you should have beat New Orleans. So kind of the story of the season where you're not taking care of business, so every other loss that you don't get, you can't make up for it, does sting.
Yeah, it's one of those where I see so much hand-wringing going on social media about like, man, this is what the Wolves are. Like, they're just a playing team. Like, they're not gonna win a championship. It's like, well, no shit. I mean, that's what we've been seeing all season. This shouldn't be news to you at this point that the Wolves are going to disappoint us after they've gotten some momentum. I mean, that's the only thing you can expect is that when they've gotten some momentum, they're going to lose quite a few games in a row that probably shouldn't be losing. And then when they're losing a couple games in a row, they're going to be winning some games that they have no business winning. So if anything is to say about that, I'm a little bit worried about, we'll talk about it more later in detail, but the play-in tournament, I mean, it seems like the lower competition we play record-wise, we struggle more, and the higher competition we play, the better. So if we get through the play-in by that logic, if we survive the play-in, we're playing a top-seeded one or two team, that might be going well for us because, again, it seems like that's the case this season with how we're playing against the Nuggets or the Thunder as opposed to some of these like middling playoff teams.
I mean, yeah. I mean, look, the Wolves are sixth in net rating this year. There is a very good team in there somewhere, and we've been frustrated by the fact that they haven't been able to find that. But like, and that's sixth coming into the night. Maybe that drops to seventh after this one, or potentially eighth if, well, nah, it won't be eighth because Denver's not playing all that well tonight without their guys. So, like, if you're top seven in net rating, fourth in the Western Conference, like, that's a solid team. And if the Wolves had taken care of business or won a few more clutch games, they would be solidly, like, it's not that crazy to see a path where the Wolves are the two seed this year if they just take care of business better, or probably if they don't make if the cat trade doesn't happen right before the season. But ultimately that doesn't matter, and you can't point to the clutch time as luck because obviously they haven't played well enough and that sort of thing. But like, I'm going to continue to kind of wait until their season ends to kind of bury them because right. they've shown glimpses of it. Their underlying numbers have been fantastic all year. Sixth in defense, 10th in offense. They haven't been top 10 in both of those categories, maybe ever in Wolves history. Probably 2004 they did it, and that's about it. So I don't know. We'll talk about the six seed kind of slipping away here, but also like, I don't think now is the time to give up on the season. They're not going to fall below eighth. So it's like they're one game against the Clippers away from being the seven seed, which is exactly where you want to be if they can't get into the top four.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we're taking a little bit of a zoomed out approach at it now. We'll get there. You know, we'll go ahead and look at the macro level of it. But let's zoom in a little bit here and hop into that first topic, Ryan, with how or foul. So obviously, with the Wolves dropping the game to the Indiana Pacers at Indiana, again, their full strength for the most part, the Wolves committed 17 turnovers, shot 25% from three. They gave up at separate points in this game an 8-0 run, a 9-0 run, and a 12-0 run. So the first how or foul for you, Ryan, is the Wolves have completely lost their mojo.
I'm going to go how. I don't know about the word completely, because I do think it's so much of their... To me, it won't be that hard for them to kind of get back to what they were doing before. But clearly, like, what this game reminded me of was so much of the early season Wolves, the first half Wolves. A few things I jotted down that kind of fall into that category. Defense just not being good enough. Indiana, again, now with their guys, were just doing what they did last time and pushing the ball at all times, which has always been an issue for the Wolves. So that's the first thing, defense. Turnovers everywhere, like you said, 17 turnovers. It was a problem, really, the past few years. They were doing such a good job of taking care of the ball during the wing streak, and now they're right back to turning the ball over. Sometimes you point to Rudy and them trying to force him the ball. I don't think, to me, by my eye, that was the reason for the turnovers in this game. And really, I don't think has been the issue for any of their recent high turnover games. So to me, it's more about attention to detail and stuff stuff like that. The ball movement just hasn't been there. They were doing such a good job of moving the ball, guys making the right pass, making the right play. That just hasn't been there. Dante isn't shooting well. That was a classic early season thing that wasn't happening. And Ant and Julius are just holding the ball too long. That's kind of goes hand in hand with the shooting. And it's just like those two guys just have not been nearly good enough for this team. Ant is a minus 24 in this game. Again, pointing out that single game plus minus isn't necessarily the best stat. He's 1-for-11 from three, 7-of-19 from the floor. Randall, I just didn't impact the game much at all. And when your top two players are getting beat by their top two players, who are Tyrese Halliburton and Obi Stephen Curry Toppin, like you're not even close. And so it's just, I don't think it's impossible for them to get back to that as soon as this Friday against Phoenix, right? But right now they just look exactly like they did earlier in the year.
Yeah, I agree with you. When you talk about the turnovers, it's eye test wise, when you look at it, it was clear. Ant was dribbling the ball off his foot. Nickeil Alexander-Walker was kind of exhibiting those early season troubles of trying to bring the ball up court, kind of just throwing it away. I mean, how many silly inbounds turnovers did they have? I mean, at least two, maybe three. Some of them, again, got bailed out because I think they called Thomas Bryant for travel, which just seemed more like a pity call in our favor you guys threw it to the wrong team there. But yeah, I mean, I alluded to it earlier as well, too, with Ant's thumb injury on his right thumb. He had that big wrap, and you know, they kept focusing on it on the Wolves broadcast. But you know, I'll give him a little bit of credence to that, because Ant hasn't necessarily been one to dribble off his shoe all the time. He's had some messy turnovers here and there. He's not the best ball handler, but I mean, you can tell it clearly affected his shooting today, which we'll talk about the shot variance later as well, too. But you know, he looked terrible out there, and I 100% agree with you. I had in my notes as well, too. If Ant and Julius cannot get going whatsoever, then they're in for a long night. I mean, look at the box score. You see, okay, well, Ant led the team with 17 points on terrible efficiency, but the second best scorer on the team, Naz Reid was the leading scorer. I'm talking about starters. The second leading scorer as the starters was Rudy Gobert. He had 16 points at 8-of-12 and 16 rebounds. I think 13 came in the first half. And Rudy had a great game. So you would look at that and think, okay, well, it went well. Well, look at those other three. Mike Conley, I mean, he only played 22 minutes. He had 7 points. He was actually pretty solid. But Jaden only had 7 field goal attempts. Julius Randle, 7 field goal attempts. And that's not like them, especially with Jaden. We've talked about it so much. And Chris Finch has talked about it all season and seasons past. Like, Jaden's the barometer of the offense, and he's shooting 7 times, you know, that's not necessarily going to be a good thing. He was struggling out there on defense as well, too. So there's so many things you can point at. Just the Wolves really got outclassed in this game. So as far as the original question, the Wolves have lost all of their mojo? I'm going to howl as well, too. And I'm going to, once again, point back to something Finch said, and he said it all season multiple times, that we have an extremely emotional group as a whole here. There's so many players on this team that just get in their own head when they're, you know, getting a bad call against them. They're getting ice cold. They're like, oh, I got to prove it. I got to jack up another bad three. They're kind of the antithesis of the not too high, not too low mantra. It's when things are going well, like you see it snowball. Like, all right, well, Dante's going to hit a three. Well, now Julius is going to crash your boards harder. And now Ant's going to, you know, start driving a little bit harder. Like they build on that snowball up. But at the same time, when you kind of put it in reverse, things fall apart so quickly for the team, where, you know, they're getting frustrated, they're getting just absolutely mentally out of the game. And so, you know, we've seen this team as well too rattle off 3 to 4 game win streaks and then lose 3 to 4 games in a row. And so I think at some point in this season they're going to maybe rattle off another 3 or 4, especially given their schedule. But I think what the scariest part of this is, as far as their mojos, what is their mojo going to be like come the postseason, come the play-in, come the first round? Because if the Wolves are in this like rut of, oh my gosh, we can't figure it out, and they're just, instead of trying to slowly fix it, they're just compounding the issue by making the same, like, all right, well, let's just try to force a pass in. It's like, no, man, like, you know, you got to fix that. And so again, I do feel like, yes, the Wolves have lost their mojo right now. Doesn't mean they can't get it back, but as of right now, it's looking a little bit of a car wreck there.
Yeah, I do think with the energy and like mojo, if that's what you want to call it, I'm not necessarily worried that we'll be missing in the playoffs, just because like we saw it last year where they got just swamped by Phoenix in the last game of the season, and immediately Ant turned into 40-point night nearly guy. Two things you mentioned that I meant to say as well. Jaden just has struggled after having through like February and March was just absolutely phenomenal, and just the last two games, or last two losses, I should say, he was fine in the blowout New Orleans win, has just not been there. I think the biggest thing you immediately look at is rebounds with him, because he was rebounding so fantastic. He had one rebound tonight and zero rebounds in the loss to the Pelicans. That's just such like a clear barometer for him where he's at. And the Wolves are playing so much better when he's playing well. And then I think you mentioned the officiating. And I thought that in the first half, the Wolves really let the officials get in their head. And it's not to say that the refs didn't miss a call with Julius. I guess they probably did. There was one classic Ant call they missed, like where he brings the ball down low and brings it up. They gets hit on the arm and didn't get the call. That's a call he has been getting for a month or two. And for whatever reason, during one possession, didn't get it tonight. That stuff happens all the time. I don't really want to have like the larger ref conversation, because I mean, everyone in every job can do better, I guess. But like, I didn't think the officials were anything like, it was a normal game to me. And so I just thought they totally let that, not the whole game, but for a small portion of it. And that was something, especially early in the year with Ant cussing out the officials, eventually leading to his one game suspension for text, that early in the season was happening. And so it worries me that all of these early season things are coming up again. Makes me think that like some things I don't understand are like, I'm not sure why we're starting Mike again. Why that's been such a consistent thing. It made sense, obviously, when Dante was originally coming back, and a few other things and a few other games as well. But I thought that like they had kind of determined a good rotation with Dante starting. The Julius Randle bench lineups that were killing people before he got hurt have kind of not been there. So it's kind of, you look at Finch, which we got also pointed out as like Finch is his ability to coach this and figure this all out has been a big thing. And during the 8th game win streak, I thought he was absolutely sensational. And during these last 3 and 4 losses, I think he's gone back to the stuff that's hurt him earlier in the year. And I say again, like, coaches can have bad stretches like players. That doesn't mean that they're bad coaches or bad players. So, like, it's not a referendum on his entire coaching tenure, obviously. But, like, he needs to do a better job. I'm sure he would admit that, given the circumstances. So, yeah, they need to break out of this. And I don't know if they have the ability to do that in the short term. But if they want to get the 6th seed, they pretty much have to.
Yeah, I mean, how many times do you see Jaden McDaniels taken out of the game and have limited playing time when he only had one foul for the entire game? I mean, Jaden played 21 minutes, And in the second half, he only played 5 minutes. And obviously by the fourth quarter, it was kind of, the game kind of got out of hand. But even then, a lot of the starters played at least like 4 or 5 minutes, and Jada didn't see the court at all. And so that speaks to, I mean, not only was he mentally out of the game, but he was ineffective out there. He was not making the right calls. And I don't know if maybe it was a him thing or a Finch thing or whatever the case is, right? A little bit of both, but he was just not being effective. He was not playing with that energy and that intention. And if we want to praise Jaden for all the growth that he's done, we want to expect that from him, then we also have to be critical of him as well too. And so Jaden does have to take quite a bit of responsibility for letting himself get taken out of the game, as does anyone else on the team. You know, Julius also only played 24 minutes or just under 24 minutes. And he was, has shown between the last game and this game that he just can't seem to hang with a Obi Toppin or a Thomas Bryant, or I mean, in this case now they have Siakam in there as well too. And, you know, Miles Turner clearly gives him problems because he just cannot get what he wants. He's getting frustrated. There were a number of times he was just frustrated by not getting a call, and, you know, he got teed up, I believe it was, you know, in this game today, and he just didn't get back on defense. So yeah, it's quite frustrating for sure.
Yep. And Jaden just hasn't been effective enough as a point of attack defender this year. Makes me think that they need to kind of, when they were playing well, he was kind of more the low man off ball stuff. Kind of goes back to starting Mike over Dante. Is that when Mike's on the court, they have a defender to hide, and I don't think they want to stick Ant on someone like Halliburton, and certainly not on like Siakam or Miles Turner. Like, that's not necessarily who they want guarding him guarding the entire game. So that leaves Jaden to guard Tyrese. And so I do wonder now, in a matchup like this, with, like, I don't know, if you can't really put Jaden on Siakam either, because then Randall's guarding like Nembhard or Nesmith or something. That doesn't really work. So maybe that tonight's not a good example of that, but like, they need Jaden to be an all defensive player, and at least tonight or last couple games they haven't been able to get that from him.
Yeah, it's not a, you know, we'll move on soon, but like, I will say that this isn't an excuse per se, but this is definitely a style of game that is difficult for the Wolves. They are not good against these like runny, like get out there and outpace you type of teams, because I mean, how many times do we see today where Julius Randle was completely lost out there on the defensive end? I mean, he's kind of running circles, getting switched on the wrong guys, getting beat. And, you know, as much of it is on him, it's on the rest of his teammates as well too, for like not getting back. And now he's covering the wrong guy, doesn't know the scheme, doesn't know the switching, the rotations. And so that's been tough. But we talked about Ant a little bit. So let's go to our how or foul or topic number two. Since the two-game losing streak, so going back starting last Monday to now, in the four games, Ant has combined to go 9 of 39 from three-point range. That's 23.1%. Now, we know that he was sporting that thumb injury today, but our topic for how or foul, Ant's three-point shooting volume has become a problem.
I'm going to say how, but only in the short term, in the sense of twice he's gone 1 of 11 from three. And to me, that's just like, you're shooting too many three. Like, you didn't have it that night, especially tonight when like he has the laceration on his hand. I gotta figure out like what's going on there. I don't remember. Do you, maybe I missed something from the Pelicans game. I don't know where he got this injury. I don't know if it was on the court, off the court. I unfortunately wasn't covering that second Pelicans game, so I don't know. The whole injury thing seemed weird, and maybe there's probably like a simple explanation for it, but I don't know what's going on there. So I didn't like his shot selection today. I didn't like his shot selection in the first Pacers game where he went 1 of 11. From a long-term sense, I haven't had a huge issue. I just think it's a downward shooting thing. Saying any player should go to the rim more probably isn't a bad idea, but I think the shooting will come back in the long-term sense. I'm not worried about it, but in the short term, especially if he's got this hand thing, I think it makes sense to not take 11 three-pointers.
Yeah, I agree with you for the most part. I'm going foul for this one, but I will say before I get into my explanation is that I think one of the worst things that we saw today was when Ant hit his first three-pointer in the third quarter, because at that point, I think he was 0 for 6 or something like that. And he made his first three, and he was like, oh, finally, like, I made one. And he went on to his very next shot. I think his three cut the lead down to 8, the Pacers lead down to 8 in the third quarter. And then they called a timeout. When they came back, one of the very next shots was Ant shooting a three and missing it right after. And I was like, oh, my gosh, like, here we go. And clearly, when he was driving, I mean, he was doing a lot better even with a bum hand today. So I do agree that that's a short-term concern. As for what happened to Ant, I don't have a credible source. but I have a made up source that says maybe play a little too much with Ant Jr. there, and Ant Jr. got a little piece of that hand. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know if that's what it is, but hopefully, again, he was icing it pretty bad. I mean, it's certainly showing that there's a bit of swelling going on there as well too. Maybe it's from him shooting so many jump shots or whatever the case was. But hopefully, yeah. I mean, they have 3 days here to hopefully get the swelling down, get it back to be manageable. Hopefully, he doesn't have to miss any more time. Losing to the Suns would be another really, really, really tough loss to take, but. Overall, though, for as far as Ant's three-point shooting volume being a problem, I'm saying foul because as frustrating as it is now, like you've mentioned before, the Wolves are largely here and have succeeded so far to the extent that they have because of his shooting. And so if it's real, we have to believe it. We can't just say, all right, you know what, Ant, from now on, you know, don't shoot so many threes anymore. And like you said, it's easy to sit here and tell someone, hey, just drive more. Anyone who's played basketball at any competitive level ever knows that it's so much easier to be like, oh, we'll just drive every time. You can blow by the guy. It's not that easy, especially when you're going against NBA athletes. And so it does get tiring. It does wear down on you, especially when you have a right hand injury. That's also something where it's like, oh, well, maybe I don't want to go in and get smacked on my hand. That's already messed up. Maybe I don't want to take a hard foul. Maybe I don't want to fall down, take a hard fall on my hand either. So the issue right now, again, is the hand, but like I said, he does have some time to kind of rest it up. And again, we have to continue to believe in that three-point shooting because his team is, other than Dante, you know, pretty devoid of three-point shooters. I mean, Nas gets hot and cold here and there, and Mike Conley can make some threes here and there, but, I mean, are you really going to believe in Julius Randle or Jaden McDaniels spacing the floor for you? I mean, Nas mostly been reliable, but he's been cold lately as well, too. So, I mean, we need Ant's shooting if we want to have any chance to be the team that we want to be.
Yeah, I mean, story of the game, Ant and Dante go 2 of 18 from 3. You're just not going to overcome that. That kind of leads us into the next topic. Wolves were 9 of 35. That's 25.7% from 3. Indiana was 13 of 35. So they took the same attempts. Indiana made had four extra makes. That's 12 points. Wolves lost by 16. So can do a little math there. So 37% from Indiana. Certainly in the first Indiana loss, that was an insane shooting game, especially in overtime from Obi Toppin. And who's the other player that Thomas Bryant hit a three of all people? Each team banked it. Like, that was a crazy game. I thought New Orleans probably shot not a crazy amount, but in that first win, they shot above what you'd expect in that one. If that's a normal shooting night for the Pelicans, the Wolves likely win that one. So, kind of my question, howl or foul, shot variance or shot luck, whatever you want to call it, is playing a role in the Wolves losing three of their last four.
I'm saying foul, and not that it doesn't play a role, because clearly it does have some sort of a role. But the reason I'm saying foul for this is I think it's a lack of defense that's really been killing us. When you talk about the Pacers shooting 13 of 35, they make exactly 13 threes per game for the season. So they're exactly at their average, and they shoot exactly 37%, which is pretty much where they were at for this game as well, too. So, you know, for this game, yeah, obviously it wasn't a huge thing, but I will say, yeah, that first Pacers game, it was pretty wild. But back to the defense part of it, I looked it up on NBA stats. Of all the teams, when you sort by how many wide open shots teams are allowing, in the last four games, so in the last weeks, and last Monday to this Monday, the Wolves are fifth most in allowing wide open opponent shots. So that's 26.5%. That's a lot. The only other teams above them, the four other teams, first is weirdly Boston, but they've been resting players. They've been resting Derek White, Jaylen Brown, Kristaps been out with that weird illness. So, you know, they're not really a fully vetted team right now as far as what they're putting out there from the last week to this week. But then you have the Hawks, which are notoriously terrible on defense. You have the Chicago Bulls, who are actively tanking and also terrible on defense. You have the Portland Trail Blazers, who's, you know, somewhere sitting in the 11-12 range of the Western Conference. And then it's us, right? And so with us, considering we don't have any injuries, at least no long-term injuries, that's quite a concern. So I think, yes, they are shooting a lot of, you know, shots that maybe they don't always make, but we're also giving them a ton of wide open shots. So that's the biggest thing for me as far as the shot luck or variance is, well, what's our defense like? And it's been pretty shit.
Yeah, I'm going to go howl that it is playing a role, because to be honest, and it's like people that cover the team like us don't want to admit that shot variance plays such a huge role in who wins night to night. So to be honest, So you can honestly take any single game, any four-game stretch, and point to shot variance. Now, with that said, and again, like, the first Indiana game was insane. The Pelicans made shots that they don't normally hit in that game. And, like, Synergy has a fun number that shows you, like, yeah, I, like, the Wolves certainly have given up a lot of wide open threes. It's felt like tonight was a perfect example of that. So it's a little, it's hard to completely like look at shot variance because obviously they're giving up. But Synergy does keep track of like what you should shoot, like what normal shooters shoot given a shot, given all the variables of the shot, wide open shot, like anything you can think of. And so basically the last two losses, they don't have the numbers for tonight, obviously. The Wolves got quote-unquote unlucky with shot variance. So yeah, I'm going to say how. But the last seven games before that, the Wolves were on the positive end of the shot luck. So like that would be my major point is that, yeah, you're getting unlucky. But like you were during the win streak, maybe the Wolves weren't really playing as well as their numbers might have said because shots were falling. So it's I think it's disingenuous to really complain about that. Maybe the first Indiana game aside, because that like Obi Toppin just like I think that's like I would say it would never happen again, but it happened tonight. But so like my thing is like you have to be able to overcome bad shooting nights, and it just feels like the Wolves are very, very dependent on shooting luck or variance or what have you. And oftentimes they do generate better shots than their opponents, so like they should go in and all that. But the biggest thing is the turnovers. Is that yeah, you're gonna have good shooting nights, you're gonna have bad shooting nights. But when you turn it over, it accentuates whatever good or bad shooting night you're having because you're just giving away so many attempts. And so like that's the biggest thing is like they gotta stop turning the ball over. They gotta start playing better defense. I'm not going to be the one sitting here saying, oh, shooting luck, because, like, you got to make your own luck, and they just haven't done that.
Yeah, I was, like, dumbfounded when I looked at how many points off turnovers that we gave up. I mean, it was just 15 points off 17 turnovers. That did not match the eye test at all. It felt like we gave up 100 points to our 17 turnovers because so many of our turnovers, I mean, these aren't, like, moving screen fouls or like, oh, we threw the ball into the second row. Now I'm going to say, I think TJ Shannon might have set the record today for throwing the ball furthest out of bounds today during garbage time to errant pass that was sailed over the heads. Julius Randle seems to be good for one or two moving screen calls that would make Carl Anthony Towns proud nowadays as well too. But yeah, a lot of them were literally just, they were throwing the ball. They were dribbling off their foot. And we talked about it earlier. I mean, these live ball turnovers are killing us, and that is a controllable. I want to say that, oh yeah, you can control if the shots go in or not. But again, that's what we're talking about, shot variance. That's kind of not a controllable sometimes. Maybe it's just an off shooting night. You can't control the officiating. That's uncontrollable sometimes. But you can get better looks. You can play better defense. You cannot turn the ball over. Those are the things that are in their control. So yeah, I think at the end of the day, the reason I went foul is because I feel like that played like the biggest role. But yeah, of course, I think Wolves fans are kind of getting into, I would say the first time in a long while, a team that is like relying on 3-point shooting as a big part of their offense. You know, they've really increased their amount of 3-point volume over the years. I think for the longest time, you know, we've seen other teams do it and we're like, oh man, they were just hot, or like, oh wow, like, you know, they shot really poorly. But now that's us. Now we're one of those teams where it's like, hey, if we want to win, better be making some shots. So yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
Yep. And the shots will come and go, like we kind of talked about with Ant. Dante will likely hit a bunch of shots next, or even at will, like, so that'll come and go. But like the stuff you can control, because I don't think you can control how many open shots go in night to night. I truly just, it's a variance thing. Sure, you can have hot and cold nights, but I think it's kind of like the hot hand fallacy. I think it's a lot more just the rolls of the dice, and obviously you try to weight the dice, but like it's, so you got to control the aspects you can, which would be turnovers, rebounds, and defense. And
not they so just many wide open shots. Don't they give haven't up so many. Yeah.
They haven't done any of that of late. So that's the biggest thing. All right, last howl or foul. 10 games left. The Wolves are. I'm going to use loss column because the Wolves have played so many more games. They're 2 games back in the loss column behind Golden State. 1 game back behind the Clippers. The Golden State one feels even further behind because they don't have the tiebreaker. Although I posted this, I'm just going to kind of keep reminding people, if the Warriors, Clippers, and Wolves are all 3 tied, the Wolves get the tiebreaker there. And it's starting to feel like that is the most likely scenario if the Wolves do get to succeed, is based on that 3-way tiebreaker. But howl or foul, the Timberwolves will finish the season in the play-in tournament, Leo.
I'm going howl. There's no amount of schedule advantage that will allow the Wolves to take things seriously, apparently. Because we've seen this in this last week, that no matter how easy of a team you put in front of them, record-wise, roster-wise, who's active, that no matter who it is, they're willing to just be like, you know what, let's try and coast to a win here and not take it seriously. And that's, you know, going to be a little bit damning because everyone keeps pointing out, oh, well, look at the race and look at how great of a schedule the Wolves have. Like I mentioned earlier, I almost wish the Wolves had a little bit more harder of a schedule that would allow them to really try and play harder and play like things are really like mattering right now. Because I think Julius Randle said in his practice availability yesterday that, oh yeah, man, you know, it happens. It's kind of the dog days of the season right now. It's, you know, it's March. Teams are kind of going through it. You're seeing some weird stuff. It's like, I get what he's saying, but no, it's not, man. Like this is a tight race right now, and this is going to matter a lot on whether or not you even make the postseason at this point. So it shouldn't be the dog days for them, and they're treating it like it is. So yeah, I think they will end up in the play-in tournament, and I think I like their chances getting out, and it has much to do with how much I believe in the Wolves as much as how much I don't believe in the other three teams that are in the play-in with us there as well, too. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, I think as of this point, the Wolves have shown us who they are, and they're a play-in team. What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, I'm going to go howl, but I do think it's still a little bit more possible than I think the average fan thinks. So coming into the night, their chance to get a top six seed, according to Basketball Reference, was 56.2%. So you take a little bit off that. Obviously, they lose tonight. And you probably take a little bit off of that because I think Basketball Reference is kind of underselling the Warriors because it's just looking at their season-long numbers. I'm not sure it knows that the Warriors traded for Butler or like has correctly factored that in. So to me, it sits at like 40-45% top six seed. So if you're asking me, are they going to finish in the play-in, it's probably more likely than not. But 40-45% is kind of what I would put it at. We're almost at the point where we're rooting for the Clippers a little bit. Because if you do, like, I was just kind of thinking about it. What, to me, the Wolves going 7-2 is kind of what you're shooting for. You're probably going to be favored in probably six of the last. So seven is probably, that gets you to 48 wins. The Warriors would need to go, if they go 7-4, which is probably their most likely record, I'm sure Warrior fans would probably say 8-3. Fair enough. That puts the Wolves and Warriors tied. And so if that's the case, the Warriors are going to get that tiebreaker unless the Clippers help you out and also get to 48 wins, which just kind of looking at their schedule, I would probably pick them at 47 wins or 46. But wouldn't take much for them to overperform that. So that's kind of the deal. If you can go 8-1, that's going to require you to win 2 out of 3 tough road games against playoff teams. Who knows what Memphis looks like? They've been kind of beaten up this last down the stretch. Who knows if Jokic is back by the time they play the Nuggets. So there's still a lot up in the air in the Wolves. I get your point about the schedule, but also like the Wolves have 2 Brooklyn games left. They have a Jazz game, a Philly game. That's just like, that's nearly half their schedule. It's just like, I get that they lost to the Pelicans. I get to the version of the Pelicans that beat the Wolves last week and the version of the Pacers that beat the Wolves last week are so much better than the Jazz, Sixers, and Nets teams that they're going to see. So I get everyone's point about like when Zion's out, people are like, well, the Pelicans have them just where they want them. And it's like, and then the Wolves won by 30. So, like, the Pelicans team we saw the second night without Zion, they have 4 of those games left. So that's like a boost. But also, the Warriors have a handful of those games left. And, like I said, they're basically 3 games back from the Warriors. So it's setting up to be, like, one of those seasons, kind of similar to 2 years ago, where you just kind of look back and go, like, if they just had won this one or two more completely winnable games, you'd be exactly where you want to be. And in the short term, that absolutely stinks and might cost them, who knows, a playoff series win, whatever it might cost them. But it also does point well. And I would say, like, being someone that is a statistics background, I would guess, and I'm not good enough with spreadsheets and stuff to do this myself, I would guess that net rating is more indicative of your record the following year than your record is. if that makes sense. I think that, and maybe even playoff success, I would probably guess net rating is more indicative of playoff success than wins and losses are. So that does point well for next year. And we got plenty of time to talk about that. I do feel highly about this team future wise, but right now it just kind of feels like a lot of these losses, not tonight, but talk about the Miami loss that they gave away really early in the year. All three of the Warriors losses, the last two tanking losses, the Wizards, all of these, if you just picked up two of those, they'd just be in a perfect spot right now. But that's where we're at.
Yeah. I wonder how many other teams are having similar discussions that we are. I mean, obviously a lot of those teams above us aren't having the exact same discussion because they're not in the play-in. But I mean, think about right above us with the Warriors. I mean, Steph's out. I mean, he's traveling with them on their road trip. But again, you know, I wouldn't imagine they're trying to push it right now too much with them. I mean, because they clearly can't win games without him. So that's what's going on in Golden State. And they look above them as well, too. I mean, you have a team like the Nuggets, you know, who obviously are playing without Jokic, and they lost today as well, too, to the Bulls, you know. So clearly they're in an interesting situation. And then you look at the Memphis Grizzlies. They've been without Ja Morant. My fantasy team knows this well for the last week or two right now. And he does not necessarily have a timeline. He's already been ruled out for the next game for them tomorrow. And yeah, I mean, then you really have like your Lakers and you have your Houston Rockets, and you know, the Lakers just lost to the Magic. They lost to the Bulls as quote unquote full strength. They got Rui Hachimura back. They got LeBron back, and they've lost two of those games to the Magic and the Bulls back to back. So not even a back to back, but two games in a row. And then the Rockets, which necessarily isn't a team that scares everyone, but they're a team that's considerably the most healthy out of everyone in this race. So anyways, my point being is I think a lot of teams are having similar discussions about, okay, well, who are we actually? And how is the rest of this last nine games or the last week or week and a half of the season going to play out? So it's going to be really interesting, not even just from a Wolves perspective, but even just like putting on, just pretend to put on the hat of a different franchise and be like, are you comfortable with where you're at right now? So, you know, it's a little bit going to be nerve-wracking to end the season here for everyone.
Yep. And if all this hinges kind of potentially on one game, if they win that first playing game, they'll be facing likely Houston or Denver in that first round. And the Wolves, I would like the Wolves' chances in that series. And then if you got the upset there, you'd be looking at likely Denver, Golden State in the second round. And again, I don't hate the, as far as second round matchups go, that's not terrible.
Tell me the Pelicans aren't in there somewhere, right? Zion, the Pelicans are not in the top. Okay. No Pacers in there hidden anywhere. I think we'll be all right.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, obviously I'd love to play the Pacers again this year.
But famous last words.
Well,
we're gonna face them in the finals, Ryan. You're gonna be like, oh shit, this is what I wanted.
Yeah, if Obi Toppin shoots the Wolves out of the NBA finals, that doesn't sound so bad right about now.
Fast forward 3 months, Obi Toppin is raising the Bill Russell Finals MVP trophy above his head.
I mean, at this point, I think about this like, if you only watch Wolves games, you would think Obi Toppin is like one of the best swingmen in the NBA, and you would think Jamal Murray is just a bum.
Yeah, absolutely.
And obviously, like neither of those things are true, but like if you're just zoned in on the Wolves, like many of us are, you get such a warped view of a lot of these players. Probably Rudy is a good example of just only watching him when he faces the Wolves, and like when Carl used to torch him, like Carl torched him earlier this year, like you just... It's so much different when you watch every night. But
yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's move on to Apex Alpha. Leo, who is your leader of the pack this week?
It may be controversial, but it may not be. My Apex Alpha is our head coach, Chris Finch. A lot of us have already heard about now, by this point, the Joe Ingles story and his decision to make Joe Ingles a starter for his son who's in attendance. And, you know, it's been talked about a lot, but I think for me, watching the Timberwolves and following sports and all that, it was about so much more than just a basketball. Like, yes, that's how we all got into it, and that's probably how we all got started and the main reason why a lot of us are here. But for me, as I've gotten older, I've really learned to embrace like the human side of it. That's why I loved Ricky Rubio. That's why I love Karl-Anthony Towns so much, because those are great people to root for. Those are people that cared about other people and didn't always put like, okay, well, winning a championship is more important than any of this stuff. You know, I think, yeah, they all have that goal and they all would love to do that. They probably sacrifice like a kidney for that to win a championship. but not before being a great human being. And so that's what I really loved about Finch, was he was willing to do that. And, you know, it was a little bit shaky, you know, in that first quarter against the Pelicans. I know you and Brandon talked about it. It didn't look great with Joe out there. I mean, Joe rimmed out a couple of shots that, you know, probably should have gone in. But at the same time, I mean, you know, the Wolves won by 30 or 40, so who cares? But, you know, it was just it was the right thing to do. And again, I can't pick anyone other than Chris Finch for that.
Yep. In the same vein, I picked Joe Ingles just to kind of to match yours. It's been impressive kind of being around him a little bit in the locker room. I'm sure that he was kind of promised a different role when he signed here, and the cat trade adding Dante to the roster kind of put that in flux for him. But his family was, I mean, he was in the playoff rotation for the Magic last year, and now is not playing basically at all for the Wolves, and got to imagine that potentially his NBA, this might be his last NBA season, who knows. But like, for him to be away from his family this long, they're all living in Orlando and he's living here. He talked about after the game, like when they were living together, whenever he would go play basketball, his son would kind of be like, oh, and which I'm sure many kids do when their dad leaves for their job. But yeah, it was just really impressive to see. And I thought it gave them a really, really big jolt, something that like we saw again, just kind of the malaise, the whatever that is. I thought, despite like the actual minutes he was out there wasn't necessarily effective, but like I thought it gave them like a good like jolt to the system and got them playing well. And I mean, they obviously needed that win after the two previous games. So yeah, the main thing was just really cool. And you just think about that, it's bigger than basketball. It's cliche. And Finch after the game, just watching it afterwards, I've just never seen him that emotional talking about it. So, yeah, really impressive stuff that I don't think would happen everywhere in the NBA.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, I mean, you can tell like how much that meant, not just him, but the whole team, you know, that they rallied around that. I think it was on Dane's podcast that I heard him talking about it with Kyle, about how you can hear, like, John Krasinski said that he heard like the locker room kind of explode in celebration once they announced, you know, to the team that Joe's in restarting. And yeah, like some say that if Joe Ingles started today, the Wolves would have won by 30 against his Pacers team. Who knows? You know, but again, it is just one of those things that, yeah, I just hope everyone understands that it doesn't kind of lose sight of the fact that, look, at the end of the day, this is just basketball. There's so much more things important than, oh, did my favorite basketball team win today? You know, did my favorite fantasy player get me a championship, or did you win me, you know, $40 in today's fantasy, you know, parlay or whatever? You know, so it's about more than that. So yeah, I was really happy to hear that.
Yep. And yeah, I think it speaks to the relationship Finch has with his players. Ingles said that after the game, like, coaches get fired all the time, so for him to even think about playing me at all in that is impressive. And I that's one thing that I think undoubtedly Finch does well. All right, prey of the week. Who do the Wolves make their prey? Tough selection here this week. I just put the G League Pelicans. That's the only thing they've done this week. I wanted to put nothing, but then I thought about your graphic that you always throw up there with all the logos, and I'm just like, well, that's just gonna make it impossible for Leo. So I just put the G League Pelicans because I got nothing else. They haven't played much this week, and that was the only thing they did. So how about you?
Hey, Ryan, put some respect on their name. That's the Birmingham Squadron you're talking about right there. Okay, that is their G League affiliate. And I was a big two thumbs, who's a big Carlo Makovich guy? I was before the draft many years ago. So, that's funny that you picked that. And yeah, I'll be sure to put the Birmingham Squadron logo in there. My prey of the week, though, I'm kind of pulling a trick out of your book here. Inanimate object, I'm going with the top six seed is the prey of the week. The Wolves made the top six seed their prey because they are no longer going to be a serious contender for the top six seed. Granted, like you said, the best chance being that three-way tiebreaker that we get, you know, so again, there's still, like you said, a 40-50% chance of maybe that happening. But, you know, I'll admit, I was hopeful even heading into tonight's game. I was like, you know, if we win this game, like, things should still be in our favor. We should be able, it should be more than a 50% chance that we're going to land in the top six seed. But,
you know, reference
if, this
agreed
is a version, if this is a version of the Wolves we're going to get, then, you know, I think at this point, you got to pray for a seven seed at minimum. Because as we know, this team could be, like, unpredictable as fuck. Like, anything can happen, no matter who they're playing, whether it's the league leading like Thunder, or like, you know, they're playing the freaking Washington Wizards. Like, literally any end of the spectrum the Wolves can land on every night. It's one of those things where I think about, like, I didn't play Dungeons and Dragons, but I know enough about it where in D&D sometimes, like, you know, you have to roll. You got to roll for something, right? If you roll above a 12, you know, you get this, or you roll below, you won't get it. The Wolves are kind of like one of those dice that does like a RNG damage based on what they roll. Like, every game when they start, they roll a dice, and it's either going to be one of the best teams that's out there, or it's going to be one of the worst teams you've ever seen. And there seems to be no in between with this team. So yeah, I think, you know, that's the way that I kind of view the Wolves year. Because at this point, I mean, we're 73 games into the season. It's kind of hard to be like, well, who knows? Maybe there's another gear they haven't hit yet. It's like, no, their gear is RNG. That is their gear. Is that they could do whatever they can, at whatever they want, on any night that they want. And so I think when I use that lens, it's easier for me not to get frustrated. We're like, ah, shit, we rolled a 1 today. You know, or we win big. It's like, yeah. Oh, we rolled like an 18. Like, this is great, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, we need a few more nat 20s to come our way here. Yeah, Mario Party had one of these. They only did it one single game where it had like custom dice. And so like one of them would be like, they all like, so if you add up a normal dice, it all adds up to 1 + 2 + 3 = 6, 10, 21, right? Die adds up to 21. So all these custom dice also added up to 21, but like one would be like sixes and ones, and the other ones would be like all four, threes and fours. And so I think the Wolves are sixes and ones. They're either hitting the nat 20, which I think people kind of lose sight of when you say like you don't know what kind of team they're gonna get, which I think people mean derogatorily. But I mean, they've kind of shown all year that we should be somewhat confident that next week they're gonna go into Denver and swamp a team that they seem to have their number against. But like you said, when they play Phoenix on Friday or Detroit on Sunday, who the heck knows what they're going to, although Phoenix Ant seems to always get up for Phoenix. But
I think we're onto something here, Ryan. And, you know, we kind of alluded to it all year where it's kind of like teams are, I would imagine teams and like head coaches and assistant coaches are like terrified to play the Timberwolves in the playoffs. They're like, yeah, we don't know if we're going to get triple double from Julius Randle and Ant's going to score 45 points tonight. We don't know if Dante's going to hit 7 3-pointers. We don't know if Nas Reed's going to go off for 30 on his own. You know, they have no idea what they're getting. Is Mike Conley going to play 5 minutes tonight, or is he going to play 25 minutes? We have no idea. Right. So it's kind of interesting.
Yep. All right. For playtime, where we take off our hats, our Wolves hats, and kind of look around the NBA, quick topic I just kind of put down was Jimmy returns to Miami tomorrow. So that's an interesting Warriors Heat game. Obviously, the Wolves are really rooting for the Heat there. Maybe we can get an Andrew Wiggins, a classic Andrew Wiggins revenge game, a classic Kyle Anderson revenge game to help out the Wolves. Certainly, if the Heat do somehow win that game, that would go a long way for helping the Wolves. But the Heat had lost 10 in a row before beating Charlotte the other night, so not sure that the Wolves should be counting on that game. But what do you think will kind of be the reaction to? I think it's gonna be mixed in Miami. I think it's gonna be some boos, some cheers. I'm sure the Heat will give kind of a half-hearted return video. But
yeah, I mean, I think, look, I don't know if any of our viewers are Miami Heat fans. I doubt it. But if they are, like, you can go ahead and kind of burn me for this one. But I know the Miami Heat fan base on what it looks like on social media, and they got to be in one of the top five, probably most toxic fan bases in terms of like who they are, and the way that they kind of like stand for their guys and like, you know, the toxicity of them. So I will say that for them, they will be very upset with Jimmy Butler, with like, oh man, like, you know, you didn't do it here. But at the same time, they will very quickly jump the other way as well too. Like, they're the classic kind of like, oh, we love you when you're great, we hate you when you're bad, it's fine. Now, does Jimmy Butler actually play? I will wager that if Steph Curry does not play, Jimmy Butler will probably try and avoid this game as well, too. He is a guy that does not want the smoke as much as he talks about that he does want the smoke. Can't wait to hear Draymond Green go on his podcast and talk about how, oh, well, you know, Jimmy Butler wasn't a play in this game, but, you know, some say that, you know, he was out there, he was ducking Bam Adebayo or something like that. Like, obviously, he won't talk about his own teammate like that. But I know Bam was not happy with the whole Jimmy exit. I'm sure, obviously, they might still be boys on it. But I remember he was absolutely sick of being asked Jimmy Butler questions when he was there. I think there's a pretty good chance that Tyler Hero and Jimmy Butler will get into it, because Tyler Hero looks like the exact type of guy that Jimmy Butler would try and bully. Now, as far as the whole Andrew Wiggins of it all, my boy, Canadian Michael Jordan, Maple Jordan right there. He's averaging 36 points in his last two games. He scored 30 points in a loss against the Rockets, and then he scored 42 points in a win against the Hornets, the lowly Hornets. And he is shooting 76%. He was 10 of 13 in the first game and 16 of 21 his next game. So, you know, we know Andrew Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins is always down for a revenge game if he plays. And so, you know, I think sticking it to Golden State would be absolutely great for him. If he got sent to a taking place away, that's going to make him have to play hard with a coach and organization that's going to expect a lot from him. And that's not something that Andrew Wiggins necessarily loves there. So other than the way that Steve Kerr is a little bit more relaxed there. So, yeah, hoping for a big game from Andrew Wiggins. You know, hopefully he does well and they can knock off the Warriors for one more game to help us keep pace there.
Yeah, that was the whole what I found so infuriating about the Cat Draymond thing from the other week was like him talking about Cat. I mean, even setting aside just the lunacy of like the reason Cat was sitting was a death in the family. But like Jimmy had ducked the Wolves for years. And I even think like that was like overblown, because he probably had like, I don't actually think he was ducking the Wolves. Like, I just think he is a guy that just didn't play very much with Miami. So it just happened to be, and they only play them, so it happened to line up that way. But like, that was the whole thing. It's like, it's such a double standard. And I don't even like giving it attention, because that's what it is attention for him. So yeah, hopefully the Heat can help out the Wolves, although just not counting on it, because the Heat, since trading Jimmy, have just been a dumpster fire, which pretty much par for the course with Jimmy. He sets a blaze when he leaves, and kind of leaves teams shattered in their wake, although Miami was probably kind of heading towards this regardless.
Do you remember at one point there was a really common discourse talking about, led by Jimmy Butler, of course, that Bam Adebayo is better than Karl Anthony Towns? Do you remember that? I'm not saying Bam sucks, but if you looked at the season he's been having and the role that he's been asked to take on, that he clearly cannot fit as even a number two on a team right now, it's quite fascinating to me how much people were willing to like try and throw Cat under for saying, oh, he's worse than this guy, he's worse than this guy. It's like, he's not. He's not worse than most guys you say he's worse than. So.
I remember that discourse happened when Phoenix made the finals and DeAndre Ayton was better than Cat. That's right. Age poorly. Like you said, Bam Adebayo. I don't like that's age pretty poorly. Whatever random teammate, whoever loses the finals this year, maybe we'll have some sort of center. Maybe Chet Holmgren will now be better than Cat.
Maybe Obi Toppin, maybe.
Well, that one's just true. Obi Toppin is clearly the greatest. There's a reason
He's Cat's ceiling, right?
There's a reason he beat out Luka Garza for 2020 Wooden Award back in college.
That's true.
Obi Toppin
can't argue
is
the facts. Yeah.
Game six, Obi Toppin is incoming. Who needs game six, Clay? We got game six, Obi. So,
oh my gosh.
All right. Two words, kind of rounding out this episode. Mine is rest days. Players and media have kind of talked about this team is tired. DiVincenzo said it after tonight's game. Quote, Chris Hine got in the locker room. We got to play harder. We got to play with a sense of urgency. We're playing like we have shit secured and we don't. It needs to turn around. That's kind of been a quote that they've been giving for the past week. I get it to a certain extent. Their schedule was insane. They're coming out of the All-Star break, but you had 2 days of rest before this game, and now you have three more after it. So if that argument had weight before, it certainly doesn't after tonight, because they have plenty of off days. They should be able to get that ironed out. And so I think these next two games against Phoenix, and if you want the sixth seed, you have to win these next two games. And they're not tanking teams. Phoenix is obviously a bad vibe central. And Detroit's been solid, but two teams that certainly at home you should win. And if you lose either of them, you're basically done at that point, because you just run out of time to start ripping off games. So I'll be very interested to see what kind of energy they bring Because personally, someone that obviously is a fan or covers this team is kind of getting a little annoyed with the talk of the just the energy levels not being there. Because obviously, you play bad, but if you can just like play hard, that can solve some of it.
Yeah, you can only say you're tired for so long. I get the whole they're new dads and they're at home or they've played the most games out of all these teams. Like, yeah, sure, all of that can be true. But at the end of the day, other teams have other things that they're dealing with as well too. They're dealing with more injuries. They're dealing with having Tom Thibodeau as your coach. Like, you know, there's varying extents to why teams have a right to quote unquote be tired. But at this point in the season, given where you're at, that cannot be an excuse. So yeah, absolutely. Rest days, it's more or less like, let's go ahead and check off this box that you cannot say, that you can no longer cross out the box saying that you can say you're tired after the Denver game because you just had, you know, 2 to 3 days off there. So I agree with you on that. Yeah.
And if they are tired, and I believe that they are, that's if you like, let's take that at face value. Well, then like it's a long season. Everyone's going to have tired times and everyone's going to have rest times. Well, here's your rest time. If you're saying, we're not getting the outcomes we like because we're not rested. Well, now you are rested. So now you can't like lose both. If you're losing both ends of that, then you're just not performing well. And so the explanation or excuse kind of goes out the window at that point.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. I will say with the Detroit game, I mean, both Phoenix and Detroit game, I mean, with Phoenix, I mean, you know that they're obviously going to have a chip on their shoulder if that even exists with this Phoenix team. If any team they're going to want to beat, it's going to be the Timberwolves for the way that we've kind of manhandled them for 7 games in a row here now. But then you have Detroit as well, too, where they know that the more that they beat us, the higher up in the standings they go, the worse pick that they have to give us, I guess. But we should also have motivation to beat them because the Pistons are sitting, I think, at 15th or 16th in the lottery right now, and so they have room to go up a little bit to 13 or 14. Well, obviously,
they do not have room to go down in the Eastern Conference standings because
the gap is so huge over there. Exactly.
They're 5.5 up on Atlanta.
Right. So, you know, if anything, yeah, it's like, you know, that's all the motivation you need there. So as far as my two words, Ryan, my two words are final chapter. I've alluded to this. The book has been out on the Timberwolves all season. They play up against opponents, they play down against opponents. They're capable of energy, or they're capable of anything. More like they're capable of RNG, right? They're the kings of RNG right now. But will the regular season ending of this book be any different than what we've been reading all season with the Wolves? You know, are they going to continue to this up and down team that's going to continue to disappoint where they can and then impress when they can? Or are they actually going to be able to, you know, finish the season on a high note and use that momentum, really propel them into, you know, what could be a very, very interesting Western Conference? I mean, as much as we talk about how difficult it is, you alluded to it earlier too, there's a lot of parity at the top. There are teams that are vulnerable and there are teams that we do on paper match up well against. That's a weird part of this Wolves team is that we don't have to play the Eastern Conference, which we're 500 against until the NBA Finals, you know, in this case. So if that's the case, then play above 500, you should be able to advance in the Western Conference playoffs. So yeah, final chapter is my two words.
Yep, the Wolves have the third most wins against the Western Conference in the NBA, only behind the Lakers and Thunder. So they perform well against the West and a lot less so against the East. They do have, the Wolves have a lot of Eastern Conference games left, 3-4 of them, which is a lot for 9 games left. But like we kind of said, 3 of them are Philly and Brooklyn. So yeah, we'll see. Starts with Friday against the Suns. The rest of the week for this pod, I think we'll kind of take the rest of the week off just with there's not really many other games going on. So we'll be back sometime this weekend breaking down the Phoenix and Detroit game. So thank you everyone for listening. We'll see you later.
Get home, drive safe.
Go Wolves. Ayoo!